anyways, we're meeting here at the Vintage Church offices in Lawrence, meeting with the head pastor, Seth Davidson, and we'll get going. So Seth, the Religion in Kansas project conducted by KU students under the auspices of the Department of Religious Studies at University of Kansas seeks to provide a public record of the religious history in Kansas in all its variety. We seek to collect as many stories as much other information as possible with the goal of creating, over time, a major repository of information on all kinds of religious bodies in Kansas, past and present. We would like to record your memories of your experiences in religious organizations. We expect that each interview will take about an hour and reassure you that you're not obligated to participate and may discontinue your involvement at any time. Since we are trying to create a public record of Kansas religious history, we are primarily interviewing persons who agree to let their interviews be available to the general public through a website and to be identified by name as the person who is interviewed. Therefore, we are requesting consent from each interviewee to allow the posting of their interview and a transcript of it on the Religion in Kansas website currently located at, and then there's the URL. And for further information, there are some contacts in terms of the professor that's heading up this project, as well as KU's Human Subjects Protection Office. So that is for you to keep, and then do you consent to participation?
I do consent.
Okay, great. Well, Seth, then why don't we go ahead and get started, and can I have you tell me a little bit about your background, just who you are as a person, where you grew up, and what brought you to Lawrence?
Yeah, sure. Grew up, was born in the late 70s, so still kind of young as a pastor. Grew up in a great home. My folks are still together. We were it was a Christian family, and that's obviously shaped who I am quite a bit. We've been in Kansas. I was born in Topeka. We've had a few stints in Colorado and California, but for the most part have been in the Kansas City area. Did athletics and debate and different things in high school, as well as being involved with Young Life, which was a non-denominational Christian ministry, and that kind of sparked my interest in doing ministry as a career. Went to Kansas State, the other Kansas school. That's right. Was an English major, but knew I wanted to do ministry. And so out of college, I went to Liberty, Missouri, another small college town just 25 minutes north of the KC Metro, and was there doing youth and college ministry. Met my wife there, and we were married in 2005, so married 5 years. We just adopted a son in December, so new dad. It's awesome. Love it. It's very demanding, but very, very cool. We've been in Lawrence for going on, it'll be 6 years in January, so yeah, love Lawrence. It's at first it was kind of challenging, the whole KU, K-State thing, but there's something in the water here, and I've now turned to the dark side, according to my Wildcat brethren. And my wife is an avid Jayhawks fan, so love being in Lawrence, love the town, love the diversity, and great being here. So is that good enough?
That's good enough. Well, then why don't you go ahead and I was reading on the website about Vintage's beginnings as just the college community group on campus. What can you tell me about that? How did that get going?
Yeah, that started, it had to have been 10 to 12 years ago. There was a group of college students who were connected at a church in Kansas City called Heartland Community Church. Used to be at 83rd and Lamar, but it's since moved into Olathe, basically 151st and Merlin. But that's where kind of grew up going there or got connected in college. They had a vibrant college ministry. And so this group of students would continue to go from Lawrence back to Heartland because they didn't find a church home that really they thought that was kind of what they were looking for. And so Heartland started this group, College Community, that was just a presence on campus. And at the time, one of my best friends, Isaac Anderson, was leading that group, or got connected with them. So I think they started out just praying. They'd get together on Sunday mornings in Wesco Hall, and just a smaller group of anywhere between 8 to 10, maybe upwards of 30 or 35 people. So that's where it started. Kevin Cloud took that over when they planted Heartland K-10 Church, and it was really this group of college community folks who got connected there, and that church was in Olathe, and the original vision was to reach Olathe, DeSoto, and Lawrence communities with kind of a Heartland church out west. And it was that college community group and maybe five young families who got connected with Heartland K-10. Did I share enough about the college community piece? That was your original question. I guess I'm going a little further than that.
Oh, but you can always take the questions in any direction you want to. Of course, I'm always open to more elaboration, but
sure.
By all means, feel free to run with the questions
and
how you see fit.
Yeah. Well, I had very little experience with college community other than one of my closest friends leading it, and I did come and speak probably 8 to 10 years ago, just for this little group in Wesco Beach, or Wesco Hall. I came on board when Heartland K-10 had been around for a few years, and they were realizing that it was too much to assume that college students or Lawrence community would drive from Lawrence into Olathe, particularly folks that, might be either non-Christian or kind of exploring their faith or wanting something a little bit different. I mean, kind of the thought was there are great churches in Lawrence, but very few, if any, that seemed to be reaching the kind of person we wanted to reach. Maybe young, maybe a little bit less Christian in their upbringing, less traditional, non-denominational sort of thing. So but realize that even if Christians would make the trek, those who were seeking wouldn't. And so the thought was, well, can we create a Heartland K-10 presence in Lawrence? And so it was, again, this college community group that started out more as freshmen and sophomores that by now were seniors graduating. They were part of that launch team. And for probably a year and a half, they thought about what would it look like to do a second site out here, and I came on after they had begun doing some trial services, and so they'd been going 3 months before I got on board. That would have been fall of 2005. I think September 2005 was when it began. They met in Smith Hall, kind of the big room that was a neat feel, kind of seating on three quarters of the room, and that worked really well. And the strategy at the time was we did a Sunday night service, so the same preacher, same musicians, same media elements, everything would just kind of drive down K-10, set up shop there, and do a service for the Lawrence community. And it wound up being mostly college students because it was on campus. That's who came. So I think that went fairly well. Within 3 or 4 months, they'd about maxed out Smith Hall, 70 or 80 folks. And they had an intern, post-college intern, who was in charge of that community, who wound up saying, hey, I don't think this is for me. So he bailed, had to do with being interested in a girl somewhere. And, it wasn't a bad thing. It wasn't the right fit for him. So that's when I came and it started January 1 of 2006. And it's been a cool journey over time, trying to grow and expand the age and demographics of our church community. We continue to come back to just the idea of our mission statement, which is connecting those who are spiritually disconnected to an authentic community of faith in Christ. And so early on, we realized that we weren't really able to reach a broad subsection of the Lawrence community because we're on campus. So it's convenient for students, but not for non-students. So, but the one place where that kind of everyone can come and feel welcome, and like when you think of Lawrence, you think of Mass Street, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And so we thought, well, if we think students will come to Mass, but we don't think the masses of Lawrence will come onto campus. So we made the decision early on to move to the Lawrence Arts Center, which was kind of one of those, you know, it's funny looking back, but, you know, it was going to cost us about $20,000 a year in rent. And we didn't know if we could afford it, but we knew that we needed to make a step like that. And our kind of, by then we had some young married couples, and you know, we were trying to grow a core group of families, and so we did. We moved into the Lawrence Arts Center, and that was a great home for at least a couple of years. And you know, it turned out as we thought it was kind of a neutral ground where people would come, and we didn't lose momentum with students. We gained momentum with Lawrence and families. And a few years. Probably 3 years into our little Lawrence Heartland K-10 thing, we realized again that kind of coming back to that mission, we were a multi-site church. We were called Heartland K-10 in Lawrence. Well, what does that mean? What does K-10 Highway have to do with your church? Are you the Heartland Church at Vermont and 7th Street? No. So that name didn't serve us well, and even the way we were doing services, though about 90% translated to Lawrence, there was a good 10% that didn't. When we'd bring out a speaker from Olathe, really likable, but people kind of in Lawrence could sniff out that this isn't one of our own, or you know, kind of like an imported Olathe church. And so, coming back to our mission, we said, well, maybe the best thing to do would be a true church plant. And that's what we opted to do. And Heartland K-10, our kind of parent church, was on board with that because they thought it was the best way to reach our community. And so I became the head pastor at that time, and we created a three-year plan to kind of wean off from that, because we... You know, they did all our books and our organization and brought out a lot of stuff for our services. And so it took time to get all of that in order. But it's been great because I feel like we've planted a church on training wheels. You know, they say that probably 85% of church plants don't make it past the first 3 years. And it's hard work, no doubt about it. And it's even so much more so because, well, when there's not a tithing base, finances are hard. When there's only one full-time person and you're trying to start a church and preach every week, you know, that's a lot happening there. And so for our first 3 years, I didn't have to worry where my salary was coming from. I didn't have to speak every Sunday. And so it really gave us time to kind of get established as a church. And by the time that 3 years was up, which was probably our 5 years into being here, we were an autonomous church and adopted the name Vintage and thought that would fit with Lawrence and fit with who we are. That's been important to us from the beginning, that we would be authentic to ourselves. And so the name Vintage comes from John 15, which is Jesus saying, I am the vine, you are the branches. So Vintage means of the vine. But it also culturally means it's kind of that old but new. And so our hope is to take the unchanging truths of the gospel, kind of that old and yet translated in ways that might be new and relevant and speak to people today, and you know, to be creative with how we teach, how we come across, in the same way we want to represent who we are, who Christ is in us, we want to do so for our community in ways that are unique to Lawrence. And so that's kind of our story, where we've been. And about a year and a half ago, we outgrew the Art Center moved to Central Junior High School that had more space. And it'll be a place where we can be for quite quite some time, and we enjoyed it. Kind of has that vintage vibe. And so, and it's still in the heart of downtown. I mean, maybe not the heart, but pretty close. It's still downtown, yeah. You know, so. So hopefully I answered a number of questions there, but that's a bit of a history.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was jotting down some ideas for things to follow up on as you're going on. So jumping back a little bit to when you first kind of hopped on board in 2005, tell me a little bit about what led you to join up with this and just some of what was going on with you personally.
Yeah, yeah. Well, personally, I was... I'd been part of another church for 5 years, and for the first three or four, that was a perfect fit. Really, and it's great church, great people. But personally, I got to be in a place where I went through some hard stuff, and that I had to wrestle through a bit of. Crisis of faith is too strong, but anything less probably isn't strong enough. I mean, I had to. Kind of went through some challenging things there, and the church was great and kind of helped me through that. But one of the things I was wrestling with was it was part of a seeker church, which basically the idea is we do a Sunday service for non-Christians, seekers, quote unquote, and then we do a midweek believer worship service. And just thinking about people today, I mean, people are interested in spiritual things. And so if they want to check out Christianity, there's just this thought that's kind of deep in me of, well, they want the real deal. They may not agree with where we're coming from, but at least be yourselves around. And I'm not saying anything bad about the Seeker Church. I'm saying for me, one thing that was going on was, okay, we need to do that together. I always want to be reaching out to folks who don't know Jesus. But I would hope I could have the same conversation with a Christian that I could have with a non-Christian. And so the idea of doing that all together, just the church to be the church, that was a big thing that was going on in me. So I was kind of in this kind of in-between place, trying to figure out what the next step was. I wanted more than just to be a college pastor, but I didn't think I was ready to be a head pastor. I had kind of jettisoned wanting to be part of a seeker church, but I didn't want to be part of a traditional church. So I was just kind of in this limbo place. Knew I was called to ministry, but wound up stepping down from that church after taking a couple weeks to just think and pray, and had been given permission from my church to do so. And the pastor said, "Hey, if you want to be here, we want you to be here, but we want you to be here." Yeah. And during that time, I just felt like God was saying, go into a land I will show you. It's Abraham in Genesis chapter 12. And, felt that like that was an invitation. So I left that post, but didn't know where I was going to wind up. So a step of faith, but just knew it was right. And during that 3 months being in between things, that's when I proposed to my wife, worked as a painter, making a little extra money to pay for the wedding ring, and my buddy Kevin Cloud gave me a call. I knew about Heartland K-10. I didn't think I was interested in Olathe, but when he mentioned Lawrence and the college town, and when he said, "Hey, we'll do this together, this kind of partnership model," that really intrigued me. So to me, it seems like a God thing of, I had a 3 to 6 month window where I would have been available at the same time. That's the 3 to 6 months they were starting, and their lead guy decided not to continue. And so it just seemed like that was God directing me here, and I've loved being here. So that's what was happening personally. And then just as the church, I really was excited about Lawrence. I really thought there was a unique niche we could meet. Kevin was open to the idea of being what we might call more missional rather than that kind of seeker background I came from. And it would let me be more of a shepherding pastor than a you know, lead CEO style pastor. And so all of those things just seem like the right fit. And Lawrence was just a very compelling location. So that brought me here. My fiance at the time also said, I think you should go, and if you do, I will go with you. And that was one of those other confirming kind of things all coming together. So.
Well, neat. Mm-hmm. I was also interested in hearing a little bit more about this 3-year weaning plan and how that kind of took shape and what that looked like. Could you elaborate a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was wrestling early on because we set out to do one thing, which was to be a multi-site church, trying to share resources to maximize impact. But that became a bit challenging, like I said, if we're going to reach Lawrence, some needs are a little bit different. So there was some tension, I would say healthy tension, but things we were wrestling through. But to Kevin and Heartland K-10's credit, it didn't take them long, particularly when I felt for a while like I was in between our congregation and Kevin and the mothership, and I was kind of trying to be the go-ahead. But as soon as I kind of said, yeah, I think we need to do something different, to Kevin's credit, he said, yeah, I think if we're going to follow our mission, I think that makes sense. And if you feel like you're called to be the leader, then we can sign off on that. And so the 3-year plan, I mean, the first year was more, they continued to do, Kevin continued to teach quite a bit, probably more like half time or a third of the time instead of 2/3 or 3/4. But he still taught quite a bit. We did all the books, all that stuff stayed in-house. We challenged our congregation to give, but they would still give to Heartland K-10. And so that was year one. We started kind of weaning off. Year two was, as best we could, we took on things ourselves. So we began the process of transferring books. We hired an administrator at that point, a 10-hour week administrator. I spoke more. We did our own series instead of Heartland K-10s. And our goal at the end of the year was to be completely through those transitions. And then year three was Heartland K-10 would be available as needed. And each year they progressively would give less from their budget towards ours, and we progressively needed to have supplemented that. And by year three, we were pretty close to being on our own, and definitely by the end of the year, we were completely on our own. I continued to meet with their staff that first year and a half, and after that, I kept meeting one-on-one with the pastor throughout the end of our time. So, and that was, it's like training wheels, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, most places kind of, you hit the ground running with nothing, and here we had, you know, we were really fortunate, so.
Cool, that's great. So then a couple times you've mentioned that you have this desire to be able to reach out to Lawrence in ways that are really unique to this place. So so what is that calling? What is this unique outreach to Lawrence? How does that take shape?
Well, just knowing the culture of Lawrence, I mean, there are certain things that anyone who lives here realizes. I mean, one, it's a highly educated community, so most people have at least an associate's degree, or at least more so politically, we're more left. We're the one, you know, blue dot in a sea of red sort of thing. So that takes shape in terms of who we are. We're pretty young. I mean, the median age is 25. And so knowing some of those things about our culture, we want to embody that a little bit. And not even so much, I mean, we're not just trying to do that because we're trying to reach folks, though we are, that also embodies us a little bit. Now, I'm not saying we're all 25 or Democrats or whatever. If anything, we've really tried to strike a balance because though Lawrence is those things, it's also, it's so diverse. I mean, it's kind of a microcosm of a large city all within, you know, 10 city or 10 mile radius-ish. Mm-hmm. And so there is just a lot of diversity. And so we would hope that instead of polarizing, whether it's politically or anything else, to kind of seize that excluded middle and to say that we're different and that we're unique, and that's okay because we value Jesus and his kingdom, and we won't always agree on certain things. We want to stay true to those essential things, which are written on our website, but there are a ton of non-essential mm-hmm. things. And so we've tried to be a place that epitomizes balance and that are able to dialogue and debate. And, you know, at the same time, we do think that people may not, even if they don't agree with you, they at least want you to stand for something. And so that's part of trying to, when we come together on Sundays, we do want to encourage people, we do want to challenge people, but according to Jesus and to the scripture, not according to preconceived kind of groups that we tend to, we want to say, okay, you're politically this way, or you do this, or, I mean, you know, we would try to, there are certain things that Jesus and the scriptures stand for, but there are a lot of things that we, because we come from a certain perspective as individuals, would say, well, because I see it this way, Jesus must as well, and I don't think that's the way it is. So that's kind of, I would hope to be some of our ethos and our values. We do value the arts, and so, I mean, Lawrence is very artistic, as well as, I think, God is the ultimate creator, and so if we're going to give a message or try to share with people, the arts can help to do so, both in terms of reaching people, but also in terms of illustrating truths, maybe in a new and different way. So we attempt to do it in that manner. If you show up on Sundays, we have, you know, a rock band, and part of that's, I mean, I think that's unique in Lawrence, but also it's just kind of who we are. We've got a number of artists, and we just kind of like that style music. We'll do some video pieces. We also, in my seeker background, we kind of got away with all, we kind of did away with anything traditional, and I think to some degree we're a rootless generation. You know, half of folks in this upcoming generation grow up in broken homes, and so there is a desire to be rooted somewhere, and so we've tried to go into the storehouse of church history and take things, whether it's the Lord's Prayer or creeds or different things that, you know, if it's just rote and if it's just something you do, that can be has been a turnoff for folks. But if you can get at the why behind what you're doing, if you can explain those in ways, in the younger generation especially, we've found some affinity to that because it provides some roots to what otherwise might be rootless. So those are a few things about maybe how that takes shape. Every Sunday when we're together, we assume non-Christians are there, and we are glad that they are, and we want them to feel welcome. At the same time, we assume that they're there because they want to encounter Jesus or see authentic Christianity, and so part of being ourselves is we'll try to be ourselves and let them eavesdrop into the conversation, let them know we know they're there and that we're glad, but to try to keep kind of the message high, to let Scripture speak for itself, maybe to be, I try not to be extremely academic in terms of using that language because I want it to be accessible, but we want to give people depth when they come. Because, I mean, you've got a document that's, you know, 2,000 years old, written. I mean, it's an amazing book, and the spiritual truths are very deep. And so we would hope that we would give a lot of depth there, too. And know that sometimes people won't agree, and that's okay. You're loved, but kind of to do our best to be authentic to Jesus and to the faith, and to invite others in, sort of thing. I don't even remember what your question was. But
No, you're doing great. I was just talking about what made the Lawrence scene unique. So
yeah.
It was good. And kind of touching on what you're finishing up with. So if I were to show up on a Sunday, how would it look like? What's kind of the order of the service? Mm-hmm. And I know you mentioned having this artistic emphasis and a rock mm-hmm. band and being welcoming, but a little bit more detail on that would be
yeah.
great.
Yeah, our hope is that you would show up and be greeted by folks, not necessarily the person handing out the bulletins, but we would hope that we're just a welcoming community that enjoys being together. So you could grab a cup of coffee and meet some new folks and then walk inside. And if we had a liturgy, so to speak, generally we have a song that the band perform, a worship song, so the congregation would participate. Mm-hmm. Then there's a welcome, and so do a few announcements, welcome newcomers, give people a chance to greet. Generally, we'll do two more songs, though we do change service order depending upon if there's a better way to make a point or do communion at the beginning rather than at the end. But generally, we've tried to craft it so that the worship kind of draws people in, you know, those first three songs, then maybe an artistic piece, you know, a media that someone has put together, a song that goes with the message. You know, what we did last time, we're in a series called Follow Me that's about discipleship. And so it was some quotes from the Bible, some quotes from, you know, some ancient rabbis and different things, and then just footage of, you know, someone walking kind of in Galilee to the tune of Walk With Me was a song by Cademan's Call. And so that just kind of helps people transition to, okay, we're talking about this idea of what it meant to be a disciple, and springboard from there into looking at the lives of the men who walked with Jesus and what that might speak to us. And so those lead to the message, where we share for about 30, 35 minutes a biblical message that hopefully is relevant and challenging and helps people understand Scripture and then apply it in some way. And we hope that then the message leads into communion. And so that, you know, the Protestant evangelical realm, we kind of got away with traditions, even including communion, which is the one thing Jesus said, do every time you meet, which isn't I'm not attempting to put down people who view it differently. I'm just saying we would hope that instead of the sermon being the high point of the message, where some skilled person gets up and speaks eloquently, that communion would be the high point, and that the worship and then the exposition of Scripture would lead to encountering the risen Christ through communion. And, you know, so that's a time where we can, as individuals and as a community, you know, repent of things that we need to, kind of own our confession of the faith when we take the bread and the wine, and then hopefully encounter God through that. And we'll have two songs at that point as people come forward during that. And you know, then there's at the end, I'll thank people for coming, maybe contextualize it a little bit, and then send out with just a blessing. Yeah, we hope to be ourselves, kind of be authentic as we're attempting to follow Jesus. We hope to always be welcoming. We hope to maybe communicate the old truths in ways that are accessible, and then to kind of send out our folks with the idea of we've been blessed by God as his family, and our charge is to be a blessing to the world, and so that hopefully church isn't just an hour on Sunday, but that we are the church and that we go out into the world, sort of thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, backtracking just a little bit, obviously you have great connections with Heartlands, but in starting up, did you, in terms of other churches that were in Lawrence, was there any tension or was there support from other bodies around in the Lawrence area, or mm-hmm. just smooth sailing? Did anyone think that you were going to be pulling members away from their mm-hmm. churches by setting something up?
Yeah, that's a good question. In general, I felt quite welcomed by the churches in Lawrence. You know, another thing unique to Lawrence is we're fairly unchurched. I mean, on a given Sunday, only 30% of the population goes to church. And so what that means is we can have as many churches. I mean, there's a great need. And so I as best I can tell, most churches and pastors have that idea and that default. And so I've experienced a kingdom-mindedness, a blessing, a, hey, do what you do, we'll do what we do. I meet with a group of pastors. We meet once a month, and I'm there probably only four or five times a year because it is hard to make time. But it's kind of, we want to be unified in that. That isn't to say there weren't a few churches or a few leaders that didn't feel threatened, had a few encounters. Remember one where we were outgrowing, we wanted to move from campus, and so we wanted to move downtown, and one option was some different churches, and most churches were at least cordial and friendly. One church felt a little threatened, I think, because we were reaching young people, and but that was one of many that did not respond in that way. So, and part of that is just, I mean, as humans, we have that. And I think it's helped over time. I mean, at first, though many were quite welcoming, there is a sense of, are you going to be here in 2 or 3 years? And you know, people want to make sure that if new churches are coming, that there's a, just hoping that it's orthodox, that it's solid, that it's not kind of not just fly by night or kind of steering in a different direction. I think over time we've developed trust and credibility in the community as well. So in general, I think that there's enough things that Christians have to be worried about, and there's enough darkness in our world, but also in Lawrence, that, you know, hopefully that which is light can be pockets of light in different places. And in general, I think the church has felt that way. And I've felt that in the church in Lawrence.
Well, good. Mm-hmm. So my next question would be, branching beyond just the Sunday evening services, mm-hmm. What are the other programs that Vintage does? I remember seeing on the website some home groups or small groups, or what kind of ministries and other organizations come out of here.
Yeah, for sure. We do have small groups. Some are co-ed and meet in homes and are generally families post-college. And then we also have discipleship groups that are generally same gender and oftentimes are for college or high school only. So we do want to get people connected there because, you know, we grow more in the midst of community and, you know, takes people who've been around a little bit longer to share with others. And also just to, you know, when we go through hard things, if we're isolated, it's so easy to get kind of picked off one by one. But if you're surrounded by people who care about you that can help, you know, so we try to get people plugged in there. We do have what we call our leadership team that are the leaders of all the ministries. So whether it's our road crew who sets up and tears down, or our connect group that tries to help welcome people and get them connected, or, you know, just all of those things. We meet with a group of leaders one time a month and try to support them and encourage them. And we encourage everyone in the congregation to be involved in volunteering in some way, in ways that they're gifted, hopefully, because part of the spiritual life is you can't always receive. You've got to pour out so that you can receive. I mean, we're like sponges. There comes a point where we just get saturated. We have to pour out. So we encourage people to serve in our church. One thing we're moving towards more and more is just realizing the kingdom of God is much bigger than our church or other churches. And so sometimes we can, without trying to, say, okay, if you're going to do your Christian work, well, you've got to serve in our church to do so. And we don't try to do that, but that can just come across. And so we've tried to push back and say, no, we want to be a missional community. We want to be about Jesus's mission, and his mission isn't just building our little church. And so we try to encourage people to do, you know, this in October there was a orphans run that supported orphans from Kenya. And so we encourage folks to do something like that. There's a guy in our community who went, I'm sorry, that was with Ethiopia, but a guy from our community this summer, a college guy, went to Kenya and really had a heart for a group of people there. And so he's trying to start a nonprofit, the Dandori Orphans Project. And so we've tried to encourage that and say, no, do that. I mean, that's really going to make an impact in our world. How can we support you? So we're trying to be more intentional about things like that. Would be kind of what I would say is missional. So sometimes, maybe just paradigm-wise, oftentimes people think of church as something I go to. Well, we hope to be a place where church is something that we are, and then we get sent out from there. And so we want to view our church kind of as maybe more of a missionary outpost in our culture, and then to make a difference in our city, in our world, for the cause of Christ. And that means sharing the good news with your words, and that means being the good news with your life, and that means taking the good news in tangible ways to the poor and the oppressed and the marginalized. And, you know, within Christianity, it's been polarized to some degree in the last 40 years of, is it social gospel or evangelism? And I just don't see any dichotomy in Scripture. And it's both. And I think the church in the West, at least portions of it, are coming to that realization and trying to do that more and more, to be honest. But that's really important to us. And so we want to do that and to kind of be blessed to be a blessing. And, you know, part of that is strategy, if you will, of I'm convinced that non-Christians in Lawrence aren't really going to take us, the church, seriously if we're not concerned about the same things they're concerned about, which, by the way, are things Jesus was concerned about. So whether it's stewarding the earth or caring for the poor and oppressed, I mean, there is a strategic purpose of, if we're going to reach our population that doesn't know Christ, we need to be doing those things. But it's not just that. I mean, Scripture says 1,100 times, care for the poor. And if it was important to God, and if it was important to Jesus, if the kingdom is bigger than just building my little church and getting butts in the pews, I mean, I think that's really important to the God whom we serve. So we want to to try to do that. I don't think we do that perfectly. I don't think we do it well yet, because our default as people and as Christians is to be concerned about ourselves first and foremost. But we would hope that more and more we're being challenged and becoming like him when we're together, and that as that happens, we know he'll change us too, going out into the world. And so this kind of social gospel or evangelism is one of those balance both and rather than an either or sort of thing. So those would be, it would be hopefully less program like here's something the church does, and more grassroots of, okay, what's God doing in your heart? How can we support that? I don't care if it has the name Vintage on it. I care that the kingdom is being expanded, and that those who are lost are hearing the good news, and those that are suffering are being met in Jesus' name. So go do that. So we've got there's the Young Life program or ministry here in Lawrence, and a lot of leaders go to our church, and I've had leaders come up and say, how can I get more involved at Vintage? And I say, well, here's some ways, and we'd love for you to be involved, but you're already pretty involved. Why don't you keep doing Young Life, and we'll keep coming to our small group so that you can be poured into, but don't spend 5 hours serving at church. Spend those 5 hours at Free State High School loving on high school kids. Let's call that kingdom ministry. There are a ton of nonprofits in Lawrence, and everybody needs volunteers. Everybody needs money. And a lot of those are doing things far better than we can do by ourselves. So if we can encourage, we've said, especially at Vintage with a lot of younger folks, we are energy and passion rich, and financially we're not so rich, and that's okay. And even in terms of, we've only been around 6 years, and there are other things out there that are doing really effective ministry. How can we support that? How can we send people into those things? Who cares what name is on it if things are happening? And we got a lot of room to grow, but that would be our heart and our hope sort of thing. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's awesome. On the financial aspect of being this missional community and supporting these other organizations, I remember reading that there's kind of a 10% tithe that will go towards supporting those. So what are those other things that are being supported? Is that going into Young Life or Dan Dory you mentioned? Maybe just a list of some of those orgs if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. If we were doing what I would hope we were doing, our congregation would be tithing 10% to Vintage, and then Vintage would be, in a sense, tithing 10% out into the community. I'd love for that to be more, and over time we'll get there. But what we do currently is, this is our sixth year, and so we give 6%, and next year it'll be 7%. But we do Young Life, we support financially. On a monthly basis, there's an organization in South Africa where there's a soup club that we sponsor that feeds kids on a monthly basis, and we support that monthly. And then we have some resources set aside that we can kind of give to special projects. So the Dan Dory Orphan Project had an event that we were able to contribute financially to that. And we do some things like that. We've tried to support Central Junior High. We kind of like being in the school. That's part of our mission field. And so mostly what we've done is they've said, it'd be great if you could provide meal or provide breakfast for our teachers, because there's not budget for that a few times a year. So we started doing that. Over time, I'd love to find ways that we could support more and better, but right now it's like, they're happy as a clam that we're supporting in that way. Over time, what I'd love to do, as we're being more of a missional community, have some of our small groups adopt maybe a ministry or a partnership. And so, you know, let's say a Tuesday night house group gets passionate about the Leo Center or the Humane Society or somewhere else. Well, what I would love to do is encourage them to do so, have them make a difference kind of in a grassroots way, and then they would kind of request resources based upon what they needed. And so hopefully that's a more organic, empowering way, but that resources then go to things that we're already a part of relationally, that we're believing and try to support, and for the congregation to kind of those things that God birthed in them for them to be able to do. We're not quite there yet. I mean, we need more definite. We need to figure out what some of those things are. We need to have ways of, and that's one thing, doing that as a group of people, I think will help filter. I mean, there are 127 nonprofits in Lawrence. Most, if not all, are pretty worthy. You can't support all. You've got to prioritize some way. And so we're trying to come up with, okay, here are the types of organizations we would want to be involved in. Not organizations specifically, but here are values. Here are things we want to have happen. Okay, you guys figure out what that is for you to serve. Okay, so we're behind that because you're behind that. And so that's, in the future, that's where I would hope more of our money would go to, as we empower people to do things. But it's a journey getting there. Hopefully by our 10th year, we'll be at 10% and we'll be doing more of these sort of things. Right now, it's when something comes up, if we feel led, we'll support it financially with that remaining. Cool. So that's where we're at there.
Good. Well, I am interested now in a little bit more about those small groups. Mm-hmm. How do they take shape? Are they kind of Bible study focused, fellowship focused, a little bit of both, mm-hmm. or what do those look like?
Yeah, it's all across the board, and part of that is a real strength that we've had. We've just kind of let people, we said, okay, you're a leader, we trust you, go do that. And therefore, they can be fairly diverse. And we would hope that there is a Bible study and or growth component. We would hope that there's a fellowship component there. And so we've kind of unleashed people to do that. And that's been good. We are actually at a time where we're needing to rethink a lot of that because we have more people wanting to get involved than we have space for. And we've not done a very good job of bringing up and training leaders to lead more groups. And so we're at a point where, I mean, we've got 5 or 6 midweek house groups and probably 12 to 15 small same-sex discipleship groups. And I think that's great for the people who are involved, but we're needing to create more ways for people to be involved, more ways to create leaders, and maybe a bit more, being more strategic with the groups. Because over time, you know, our default is just to kind of get inward folk. That's just what we do as people, and so that's what we do as Christians. But to find ways that we can counteract that in our lives and in our church. And so one thing we're trying to do, we have a community strategy team that's trying to rethink this and try to think, okay, what are we trying to do? Why are we trying to do it this way? And still keep an organic nature, but say, okay, you can do whatever you want, but it needs to do these things. And so some groups might study a book in the Bible. Some might read a different piece of Christian literature, or some it might be more kind of life on life, and to have some flexibility there, but to say, okay, every group needs to have at least seasons where they're open to new people coming. Every group needs to have some way in which we're outward focused to become more small missional communities where we're serving. And so we're trying to rethink some of that and just try to be a little bit more more specific, you know, because if we're going to bring on more leaders or get people connected, we're just needing a bit more clarity there to be able to support them better. So we're in a bit of a time of transition that I think will help us do some of the things I've mentioned.
Yeah.
But that's kind of where we're at right now.
Okay, so for those that are leading the small groups right now, are those all a part of the leadership team?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, got it.
Yep, they are.
Let's see. Why don't... sorry, as I'm like trying to collect my thoughts here.
Sure.
Take this long, awkward pause. I was noticing we're approaching an hour, so I don't want to take up too much of your time. But
it's up to you. I've got a phone call at 2:45.
Okay.
Okay until then.
Okay, great. Well, why don't I just have you? Are there any stories, any specific challenges, or any great victories that you can recall from your own time as being a part of this church that we should have recorded?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a number of cool stories that have happened. One that comes to mind is a kid by the name of Brian, and I won't give last names, but you know, Brian grew up in Lawrence, was involved in churches, but it never took root for him. And when he was in high school, through kind of a bad breakup, kind of just chucked the whole God thing. But through that time, his younger brother was involved in a Bible study with a gal named Jamie, who's one of our leaders, and he doesn't even know why, but he called her up and kind of at this rock bottom place and just said, hey, can we get together? And so Jamie and her husband John started meeting with Brian. This would have been three or four, probably four years ago now. And so through their relationship, Brian started coming to church, and he's a real intellectual dude, so just didn't think science and faith and all that fit together. But through his friendship with John and Jamie, they helped him through his life stuff. He also could ask them questions, and they didn't treat him like a leper. I mean, they answered most of his questions. Or if they didn't, they would go find the answers or kind of help him through that. And so over time, he started coming to Vintage, and he tells a story about the first time he came to the art center, and the rock band was... he came early and they were rehearsing, and he thought, oh no, this is going to mess up church. And he realized it was church. And so he just really was connected, really enjoyed our church, but really what he enjoyed was John and Jamie. And over time, those questions he had, he got a lot of answers, but even more than that, he just realized there was more that he kind of wanted what they had. And so I remember being in small groups with John telling me about Brian, this kid that he thought was brilliant, that he really loved, that asked these great questions, that would just devour books. John would mention, oh, I liked Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis, and the next week Brian would have it, he would have finished it. God was just at work in his life, and over time the, hey, you Christians believe this, became, hey, we believe this, kind of that I shift happened, and he came to faith and really grew. And when our college director had him in a small group, and now Brian is our college director, and he leads other guys, and he's now in one of my Bible studies. And I mean, he's just an incredible young man. He's getting ready to graduate from KU, and just that life that was changed. Another cool story. So Brian comes to Christ and then, starts leading, and he leads a small group of guys, and they have a number of them weren't, kind of thought they were Christians, but looking back kind of realized that they weren't. But in last year in September, on the same night after church, two guys in Brian's group who he had invited to Vintage and kind of poured into them, They both had kind of difficult breakups with their girlfriends. Same thing Brian had dealt with. Kind of got to rock bottom, and both came to Christ on the same night, kind of individually. And then they called one another and was like, hey, I came to faith. No way, I did as well. And both those guys then really were in Brian's group and were poured into, and they were baptized in May. And now these guys are leading others. I met Joe, whom you met, was one of those guys, and he's now leading a group of guys. And so just people like that, those are some cool things. Seeing the way people have been touched and changed by community has been a neat deal. There was a guy who named Aaron, who kind of had, he's kind of a melancholy sort of guy, and just kind of saw the world in grays and blacks, and got involved in our church, and got involved with just a group of friends, and started serving on our road crew, and really started growing. And though he continued to be melancholy, saw some life and hope, and he bought a new bike. He was excited about it. He came, and we're at the art center. He attaches it to a pole there, and it gets stolen during church, and he's just bummed beyond belief. And you know, he'd saved up. And so anyway, Kirk, our road crew leader, who was also in Aaron's small group, had the idea. Aaron's birthday's coming up. Let's pool money to buy him a new bike, invite him out. We throw this church party that is really more of a birthday for Aaron. He just doesn't know it. Mm-hmm. He shows up, and we have the opportunity to give him this bike, and he's just floored because no one's ever done this. You know, things like that, kind of a harder sort of story in that college community group. John and Jeanette, young married, they were in college, got married, were part of our core group. Jeanette's younger brother wound up taking his life. You know, just a horrible thing to deal with. At the same time, they were trying to move into a new place, and you know, kind of the poop all hit the fan at one time. And I remember getting the call from her about that, and you know, just my heart going out, obviously. And yet, one of those where I just knew God had a. I mean, you never know what to say. Even as a pastor, you don't know what to say, and yet just felt like God kind of gave me a sense, even personally, to speak into them and to know that he was still in control even in this hard situation, and seeing that happen in others in our community. And so they have less than a day to move, and they need to move all their things out. So the church gets around them and helps them move their things out. And they have to replace some carpeting because the dog had chewed it, and they don't know how to do that. Well, there's a guy who can fix the carpeting, and you know, she has to drive into Western Kansas, and people from our church go with her, and myself, and you know, four guys show up just to be at the funeral. And I mean, just, you know, I'm not remembering all the things that happened, but what stands out is just the way the community surrounded them, and to hear Jeanette's response about how much she was blessed by Christ in the midst of community, in the midst of that crisis. You know, that was one of those where it was like, okay, the church is being the church here. Was kind of a neat memory. Recently, in the last probably 8 or 9 months ago, I said we're energy and passion rich, financially not so much. Mm-hmm. God's always provided for us just what we needed, which has been awesome. But we're 5 years into it. I'm still the only full-time guy. We've grown from, you know, 50 to 70 to now 250 to 300 on a big night. And that's a lot. We've said for a number of years, can we afford to hire or can we not afford to hire? I mean, we can't afford it, so we can't do it, but we're in a place where we probably can't grow much further. And so we did, we called it a vision campaign, trying to come back to what our vision is, what we're trying to do, and our next step is to hire a person. And so we did a capital campaign, not for a building, but just enough to hire another person. To see the community come around that was awesome. But I remember one, it's hard to ask for money, even if you believe in it, and even if there are people in your church who they own the church, own it, meaning they receive from it. It's not like I'm just asking for a handout from a joke. But it, those things are hard to do, but we kind of knew we needed to. And so we kind of break down, okay, if these people gave this much, not individuals, but if 20 college students gave $20 a month, and, you know, all of these things. So we lay out this thing, we're trying to share, and it's well received. But I get up to kind of do this conclusion, and this guy in the front row is raising his hand. And this is one of these awkward, like, I mean, this could be really bad. I mean, you've talked about money. There's someone who raises their hand. Are they going to say you're horrible? Are they going to be kind of a free? I mean, who knows? But I kind of have this moment of, okay, I can't just kind of say, shut up. I mean, to not. So I said, he raises his hand. Hey, can I talk? I'm like, go ahead and talk. And it's this guy, Kevin, one of the guys who I mentioned who came to faith. Yeah. And he said, hey, I'm a college student. This church has really changed my life. God's done amazing things. And I just feel like, you know, I can't do a whole lot. And you college students, we can't do a whole lot. But we can eat one less Chipotle a burrito a month. And so I'm going to stop eating a Chipotle burrito a week. I'm going to give up. I'm going to give $20 every month, and I challenge you to do the same thing. And, you know, it was just kind of an amazing, I mean, just the spirit in the room went from this tension of, wow, this could be, like, what the heck is going on, to, I mean, he couldn't have explained everything we were hoping to do any better in such an honest, authentic sort of way. And by God's grace, kind of when we were through that time, there was enough to be able to hire someone to hopefully help take the vision and make it a reality. There's a guy with the South Africa project, we had a heart for to make a difference in the world, but the world is a big place. So there was some folks who had Africa kind of on their heart, and I've been to South Africa, so through that, kind of South Africa came on our heart, and so we took a vision trip there to find out how can we serve in ways that really help them, and visited some different ministries, and while we were there, two cool things happened. One, we got connected with Oceans of Mercy, which does these soup clubs that really is a way to invest in a community for the long term. Meet tangible needs, then meet educational needs, and at some point you can build a community center that then can become a church, kind of a so just a neat deal, and that's who we support now. But while we were there, one of the guys who went kind of had this tug to just knew that people needed clean water in the world, and what could we do about that? So he came back with this idea for River to Well, he called it. And it was a photo competition to raise money to put a well in a community in Africa that needed it. And, you know, there are other things out there. But this was, and when we talk about a missional grassroots idea, Ken had that vision, and Ken built a team, and they put together River to Well. And we supported it, but it wasn't a vintage thing, mm-hmm. because we wanted it to be community-wide and even worldwide, meaning they had photographs submitted from, I mean, at least 3 or 4 continents, 10 countries, and then a lot locally, both in our church and outside. But to see someone kind of get a heart for this and God place it on their heart, and then them feel freedom to do that, and then see that be successful, and then see a well being built in Africa in one of the villages we visited. And then this was their second year, and they've done it again. It's reproducible. It's just neat seeing people kind of catch the vision, run with it, and really make a difference. And I love, you know, that I love that it doesn't have the name Vintage. I love that it's some sort of assist, if you will. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking credit for it. I have no credit in it. I don't care if it's, but being a part of something like that, that empowers people, I think the true effectiveness of our church, hopefully we'll see it in decades when college students come to faith and be discipled and then get a vision to be sent out, and then the Kens and the Joes and the Kevins and the Maggies and all of those folks go out and do it. Many won't be in our little congregation, and that's okay. But I think we can make a difference in the world and in our generation, one life at a time. And those are the things that kind of get me excited. And I guess I gave a lot of answers from younger folks. The same things have happened with families and, you know, a number of people that had never found a church and that have gotten connected. And we've been a place that's been a place of recovery for not just non-Christians, but for Christians. And so there are a number of stories, but those are a few for you.
Great, thanks so much. Well, I will leave it up there. That way you can get to your phone call. But thanks again for taking the time and sharing all those stories. It was great.
Sure.